roll on that line, serving a couple lefts and rights, a little Hadouken. Oh, God, that was fun to see. I know it's like poor form. He's a young rookie. He didn't,
if we're going to be honest about it, he didn't really do anything wrong. He just kind of engaged in a board battle with Austin Matthews. But why would we let facts get in the way of a good time? I also like the muscle memory clicking in for Joe Bowen. Ty, Max, who cares? He's punching like that. Call him Phil. Who? What does it matter? It was incredible to see in that moment. Again, this is the text I sent to, just a guy who I texted for no reason last night, Ben Ennis. I was like, this guy gets it. And I think that is the thing that has jumped out in spades about him. I won't say from the jump, because from the jump, Max Domi was saying all the right things, but it wasn't working. Mm-hmm. But the second it's clicked, it has allowed him to grow into this. He has been a vocal kind of voice. I won't speak to what's going on in the room. I don't think he is like overpowering the core leadership group there, but he has been a public face of the team. He's the guy doing walk-off interviews a lot of the time. I mean, again, part of that is the name, the lineage. It's a guy who just understands it. And, you know, I don't want to make everything about Mitch Marner, but for a guy who it seems like Marner, the pressures of the market can occasionally, and I don't think that's happened this year, but it can weigh on him. It feels like that never happens for Domi, and it is just a driving force for him as opposed to a weight that never seems to kind of bring him down.
I also think that it can help to insulate guys like Marner a little bit more. Like when Domi takes up more of the spotlight, you're not looking for Mitch to talk after every single game anymore. You're not, looking to jump all over Mitch when, he doesn't have a good night, because sometimes Domi is there to sort of step in and take the brunt of the criticism from the media. And I would keep going back to a comment Domi made earlier in the season when he was asked about Matthews' potential as a Selke Trophy winner in addition to being a Hart and a Rocket guy. And Domi was just like, look, this is not what we care about. Like, we don't care about individual awards here in this room. We care about one goal only, and that's winning the Stanley Cup. And we just never used to hear stuff like that from the Toronto Maple Leafs. He just feels like he has the wherewithal to just, he knows what's up. He just seems like an intelligent hockey guy, knows how to play the market, and it's working out for him right now. And it's it just makes it interesting moving forward. What do you do with a guy like that? What do you do with a Bertuzzi? Like, it seems like every single year there's these critical decisions that have to be made, that now suddenly Domi is a guy that can shape part of the future of your organization. Like, who would have said that in November? Nobody.
Yeah, and they do feel a little different in that Tyler Bertuzzi feels a little more likely to find the most lucrative offer that's available for him. And do not begrudge him one bit. Go get your money. Not to say that Max Domi is sitting here, completely unworried about term or money or anything along those lines. I'm sure all those things matter. But again, the lineage, he understands what it means. There clearly is a connection with the fan base here as well. And, again, I think you do have to state this point. I don't think the result of the game mattered last night, but if it did, him taking that instigator, it hurt them in the game. Like, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. I don't know that they get scored on the power play, but the penalty kill was a massive problem for them in that game, and they got themselves shorthanded because of that. So I think the response and jumping in and defending Matthews, and quite honestly, Luke Fox had the line about it, literally fighting to stay on his line. I think all that matters more than a Thursday game against the Devils and when you're, want home ice, or maybe you don't want home ice. I think that's fine, but I do think you have to mention the fact that that penalty killed them in the game. That him taking the instigator in the 10 minute, and not just the penalty, but him not being there and then mixing up the lines completely, it impacted the game. It's not the reason they lost. We might get to that guy in a second, but it definitely impacted the game in a big way.
Well, if it's a playoff game, then what he did last night is Kadri all over again.
Yeah, you're right.
Like, basically the exact same thing. Like, clearly the stakes are not as high. Some people will, I think, push back on our lack of importance for home ice, for sure, but that's exactly what Kadri did. Mm-hmm. Kadri was stepping up for teammates in the postseason.
That was a problem, though. Kadri should have done that.
Right.
If he would have just jumped and maimed the guy, it would have been an instigator and a 10.
Just
he wouldn't have been suspended.
Much,
That's the problem.
Don't cross-check guys in the face.
Morgan Riley can also learn his lesson. Yeah.
Exactly right. So it is funny, the line that needs to be walked in those sort of situations. But with Domi, I think he understood the assignment again last night. One thing is more important than the other, and I don't think home ice is going to matter one way or another. In fact, I think if you go on the road and win one, sort of sets you up to be in a better spot than anything. So I don't look at it as that important. He just gets it. He understood the assignment last night, and it ended up hurting them. But I don't think there's too many people that really care about that.
Yeah, I know. Certainly not me. Not hand up on that. We'll dive back into the skating part of the Leafs a little later on. But quickly on this, Matthews needs, I haven't got your opinion. Everyone in the world has weighed in, but I haven't heard yours. Matthews needs two more. If he does not get the two more on Saturday, whether it's one, whether it's none, if he needs the two goals in the back-to-back against Florida and Tampa, what are you doing there? Playing him?
I'm playing him 100%.
Okay.
I just don't see, if something were to happen to Auston Matthews, that would be an unbelievable fluke, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't seem like something that is likely. I think he'd be smart enough to not put himself in situations where he could end up getting injured. I mean, maybe you don't use your big body as much as you would in the other 81 or 80 games of the year. Just be smart about it. But man, I think yes, clearly the playoffs are more important, but the chances that, I hope everyone's knocking on wood as I say this, the chances of him getting injured in one or two games at the end of the season are pretty nil in my mind, and I'd let him try and go for it.
I would play him in the Tampa game, but I have no qualms that Florida would what an accident. It's too dangerous with Florida. That's where I'm out on that. All right, Ilya Samsonov, I won't go as far as buried the lead, but we've skirted the problem in the game long enough last night. Before we get into it, let's just hear from Sheldon Keefe on what he made of Ilya Samsonov's night last night.
Your sense of Samsonov tonight?
Well, we clearly hung him out to dry early in the hockey game, so we don't give him much of an opportunity to be in this game here today. So, we'll move on as a team, and we need him to move on as well. He's been outstanding for us, and he'll be outstanding next time out. I was looking at it before the game. I can't remember the number, but I caught my eye the number of regulation losses this guy's had this season. It's pretty remarkable the opportunities he's given us to win this season. So, Laurentiis won pretty quick.
I think that's what he has to say. I do think you absolutely have to go back to him on Saturday. I will say it was bad. You look at the numbers. I mean, some of them are point blank shots. I'm not going to sit here and absolve him. If this is a month ago, I'm sitting here saying, pounding the table going, see, this is why they always wanted Joe Wall to be the number one starter. But I think that you absolutely have to get him back in there on Saturday now. If that allows you to then potentially have that be the get right game, and then he is off on vacation until the playoffs start, maybe he feels he needs one more and then you do give him that. But if there was any doubt about who got the net on Saturday night, I know it's crazy to say about a guy who struggled, but you have to give it back to him on Saturday because he needs to have a chance to kind of get right before the playoffs in a game with some stakes. And it won't be stakes for the Leafs, but the Wings still need it.
As a goalie myself, I'm smiling ear to ear.
How did I not know this?
Yeah. Well, I used to be. I don't play as much anymore.
You're not. I got to be honest. You're a little normal for that.
I appreciate that. Yeah, I get that from time to time. Or maybe you just don't know me that well.
Yeah, probably the latter.
But as a goalie, I love hearing the coach come out and talk in that way and just trying to keep Samsonov's confidence level up. Because again, we talked about it briefly in the first block, the issue with Samsonov has been confidence this season. That has been his major issue. Clearly the guy has the tools to be a really good goaltender. Since January 1st, he's been one of the best goalies in the entire league. But the issue has always been, I fall back into a little bit of a shell when things don't go my way. And having Sheldon Keefe, you knew that he was going to say, we expect this guy to be great again. It wasn't him. Mm-hmm. It was the team. There have been times this season where Keefe has kind of buried Samsonov a little bit, but you just could not do that in that situation. And what hearing that tells me is that the expectation would be Samsonov is right back in the net next game with every opportunity to sort of bounce back here and get right. Because this would be a much easier situation if Joseph Woll was playing lights out.
Mm-hmm.
But he hasn't been lights out really since he came back from injury. He was outstanding pre-injury. but he's been okay to good, I would say, in the time since the injury. So you got to get him back in there at some point, too, to sort of get right as well. But Samsonov is the most important because up until last night, he was the bona fide number one heading into game one of the postseason.
Yeah, I think the point you make about Wall is an interesting one, because I think if he had been nails, because that it was Samsonov did do enough to grab the job, take it, and make it his own. He did do enough to do that. But Joe Wall had to capitulate a little bit. Yeah. You saw the way that this team handled the goaltending situation all year long. Just go listen to listen to the words they say when they talk about these guys, okay? So I actually think if Wall had not capitulated the net, this would still be very much a toss-up. But I think totally. The fact that Wall has kind of taken that step back, it does allow them to just say, all right, Sammy, you're back in there Saturday. Please be good. I don't want to have this conversation again on a Monday morning. Again, plenty more on the Leafs. We'll talk with McKee about this story of the potential of big changes. Again, I know just like earth-shattering news that there could be changes after a Leaf season. Mm-hmm. Heard it before. Actually came to fruition last year. We'll see what that could mean for this year. Sidney Crosby. He's the first player since Jaromir Jagr did it to join the NHL's top 10 in all-time scoring. Gets his 1,000th assist last night, sets up the OT winner. There is nobody. I don't know that there's many Canadians that don't have a special spot for Sidney Crosby, but again, we talk about our vintage, like he's our guy. It is remarkable to see him do this. Not that we needed him to become a top 10 scorer to feel this way about him, but what he's done, I mean, the checkpoints he's crossed this year, becoming the only guy since Gretzky with 19 consecutive point per game seasons and just checking every single box. I don't know that it was possible, but it does feel like everyone's respect for Sid, again, this feels impossible to say, but almost took an uptick this year. With him dragging this team that's, you know, let's be honest, like a carcass of its former self to potentially the postseason. The fact that Dubas is there just makes it such a lightning point of inflection from a narrative perspective. Yeah. Carlson scores the OT winner last night just to make it even sexier. This Penguins team is truly a content gift, but from Crosby specifically, it is just impossible not to just respect so much what he's done. And it's crazy to say about a guy who, you know, we all remember the like early Crosby of him whining stuff, but since he got the cup, he's been bulletproof. And it never felt like you could go up another level after the golden goal and the cup and everything he's done. But this does feel like it's just another kind of feather in the cap for him. What, honestly, to a certain extent, whether they get in or not, I know he won't feel that way, but it does feel like we're going to give him credit for this season regardless, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, part of what makes somebody great is longevity. Like, we saw it with Brady. We're seeing it with LeBron and Sidney Crosby.
Might still see it with Brady.
Yeah, I heard that yesterday. Crosby is no different. I mean, the guy still is over a point per game every single year without a shadow of a doubt. Mm-hmm. And now to have the Penguins having won 7 of 9, to get back into a playoff spot when it felt like it was absolutely done. The rumors that Sid was going to be on the move with a trade deadline, and they were absolutely cooked. And now you start to wonder, okay, if he can drag this team into the postseason, who cares really what happens? Because I don't think anybody thinks the Penguins are actually that good. Mm-hmm. But you start to wonder, like, where does this rank in terms of Sidney Crosby's like greatest stretches of hockey in his career? Clearly he's a 3-time Stanley Cup champion and he scored the golden goal. So those are up there on the Mount Rushmore for him.
Pretty good.
But you start to think like, man, at his age, to do what he's doing, to will his team into the postseason, put them on his back this way, and then, hey, maybe they go on to do something in the postseason. But this is, I would think, somewhere in probably the top five of things that Sidney Crosby has done in a Pittsburgh Penguins uniform, which is saying something because he's been remarkable and, frankly, my favorite player since he came into the league, and I'm sure a lot of people feel the same way.
Yeah, I mean, I'll go hand up. I was a young, impressionable lad, watched Alex Ovechkin with his tinted visor running around and crushing people and thinking that was pretty cool, but I smartened up pretty quickly. Okay. the run that will always be untouchable. I don't have it exactly in front of me, but I just have the awards that he won in here. So Ted Lindsay in 2013 and 13-14 Art Ross. He also won the Hart and the Ted Lindsay the next year. He won the Conn Smythe Trophy the consecutive 2 years, throwing an Olympic gold medal in 14 there. That is always going to be kind of pinnacle Crosby, but I think you mentioned the longevity aspect of this. I mean, Crosby and LeBron could not be two more like polar opposite entities in terms of the polarizing aspect of their nature and how they're viewed in their sports. But just the fact that they've been able to do it for so long,
yeah.
And it does add another element. I mean, to bring it back to our favorite thing in the world this week, the Masters. We all love Tiger Woods, but what did the 2019 Masters do for how we feel about him?
Yep.
It didn't change anything. But it changed everything, if that makes any sense. Like, there was no more love you could have had. If you're a golf fan or you're a Tiger guy, there was no more love in your heart you could have had for him. But then he won the 2019 Masters, and he's hugging his son just like his dad hugged him. And it did go up a level. And I feel like if he wins the Cup, it does become the 2019 Masters. I don't think that's going to happen. But these late career pushes where... Not that he should be done. I don't think anybody looks at Sidney Crosby and said, oh, he should be long in the tooth. This guy's dominance should be over. But it shouldn't be like this still. There's no way. And then I don't know if you saw this yesterday, but there was a players poll. He is still the guy in the league outside of McDavid that he was second in that for voting of the player you would most take to win a game seven. For the game seven question, it was Crosby. To build a franchise, it was McDavid followed by Crosby. He rightfully so has so much respect from his peers. It's awesome to see. He's now in a playoff spot. I can't imagine there's anyone in the world that, unless you're just so hardcore, like anti-Dubas that you want to see them fail. I actually think that's the only way, or you're like a Caps fan or something, then
yeah,
of course.
Yeah, Dubas part doesn't bother me.
There's no way you can see this and not want them to find a way to get in here.
They were totally left for dead, and Sidney Crosby is willing them into the postseason. It's just a remarkable story, and I love your point about Tiger's 2019 Masters and sort of the parallel. Like, when you ask people our parents' age, what was the most memorable Jack Nicklaus major? It was 86. And he was, 46 at the time?
Yeah.
And so there's something to be said for watching those that were great in the primes of their career still be able to get it done in the latter stages of their career. There's something just wholesome and special about it. And you're witnessing right now with Crosby. It's totally captivated hockey fans everywhere. And yeah, if you're wishing ill on the Penguins because of Dubas, I mean, I think you're going to be coming the other way when Sidney Crosby eventually retires and you wonder, like, why didn't I appreciate this guy a little bit more?
Oh, no, I think the people who are wishing ill, they just, and I'll be honest, it's like, as a guy who grew up loving LeBron, it's like I do this with the Lakers now. It's like, when LeBron wins, LeBron wins. And when the Lakers lose, the Lakers lose. It's like, I think that's what's happening with the Penguins.
Yeah,
if the Penguins
like
get in, Sidney Crosby, through sheer power of will over, and this is my opinion, I just think there are a lot of people who share it, is that through the sheer power of will, overcame all the terrible decisions Kyle Dubas made and got them in. And if they don't get in, it's like, even Sidney Crosby could not overcome the terrible Kyle Dubas decisions.
I think the players on the team would agree with you, though.
Yeah,
like, that's
no.
The crazy thing.
Oh, the players on the team, the players in the league, Kyle Dubas. It's like, you think, I guarantee you he doesn't go to bed at night wondering, if the Penguins are on the outside looking in, he's not going to go to bed wondering why Sidney Crosby didn't do more, okay? That's not going to be happening here. They have got a gauntlet to finish their year. So tomorrow, it's not Hockey Night in Canada because it's in Pittsburgh, but Hockey Night. Bruins, Penguins at 8:00, and then you got, they're at home to the Preds, and then they finish the season Wednesday night on the last night of the regular season on the island.
Oh, I hope they get in.
I need it. I need it.
That
need
play
it.
He made behind the net to set up the first goal.
Oh, the little bank off.
Oh,
the...
my goodness.
Yes.
Just, oh, it's special.
Yeah, he's so good, and we are so lucky.
We are not worthy.
Yeah, we truly aren't. I don't know if there's a lot to say on this other than, God, what a story, so let's sneak it in here. Shohei's boy, Ipe, stealing
goodness.
All the money in the land from him. Allegedly, although he admitted it via text.
Do I
have to still say allegedly if a guy allegedly admitted it via text? I think if I phrase it that way, I'm okay.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe the lawyers will let me know. This story is wild.
It's one of the craziest stories of all time. Like, I don't think it's getting enough
honestly. Because I was messaging some buds who are more hockey buds than they are baseball buds. And I was like, are you paying attention to this story? They're like, I saw he was gambling. I didn't really care beyond that. And then I sent them the figures last night where it was a total, net loss of $40 million. let me just say that one more time. It wasn't $4 million bucks. Like, the $4.5 million that he allegedly wired to this guy. No, it was $40 million the interpreter had gambled away, an average unit stake of just under 13 grand. Apparently, there was also a bet in there for $10, which I think is actually the funniest part of all this. He's like, I don't feel too good about this one. I shouldn't feel good about any of my bets because I've lost over $40 million, but this one I better not have too big a stake on. Or I don't know, maybe it was the ultimate long shot and it was like, just a little flyer here and I'm all the way back. Maybe that was like a 5,000 leg parlay or something. I don't know what type of degen this guy is. This story is incredible. I actually hope it never ends. I hope we never find it out. And 20 years from now, I'm getting more drip drabs about this of like, oh, here's the security footage of him walking into the bank and just telling them, hey, I'm Shohei Ohtani. And I'm going, all right, sure, good enough for me. This story is nuts.
So Nate Silver is obviously the odds guy on 538. He wrote that this works out to a minus 17 return on investment, which is hard to do. Just betting at random on point spreads at a minus 110 gives you a negative 4% return on investment. So this guy was like an all-time bad gambler. All time. And then when you have the smallest wager of 10 is absolutely insane, but net losses of $40.7 million, total losing bets, $182.9 million. Like, I don't want to be put on my tinfoil hat, but like, this should be a bigger story. Like, this is crazy. This is the interpreter of the most famous athlete in North America, Japan, and potentially the entire world. And he had what was, I guess, $16 million, somehow didn't notice.
Yeah.
Like, and this guy's an all-time bad gambler. Like, this story is crazy.
Yeah, and to your point, like, we shouldn't laugh. I wouldn't want somebody laughing about somebody stealing millions and millions of dollars from me, especially somebody that I trusted to. And, you know, sometimes we say the word literally, but we don't mean it. I mean this literally. Literally speak for him. It's like, you are my public persona. You get to say what I say, and I just got to presume you're going about it the right way. The amount of betrayal that Shohei would feel throughout all this. And like, look, I know, not a sympathetic figure here. I'm not looking for any for him. Still boo him when he comes to town at the end of this month, okay? I'm not telling you not to, but the amount of betrayal, you would just be so gutted and crushed. I can't believe it.
I was saying this to you during the break. I get that Shohei has a ton of money.
Yeah.
I understand that. I have no idea how this guy could just siphon $16 million from him over 3 years.
It is a good question. I got to be honest.
Like, something is a little bit off here.
Guy just loves baseball.
I don't want to insinuate. And I saw a funny tweet from John Heyman. I think he was actually being serious, but Ipe not betting on baseball showed like incredible restraint.
We were joking about this last night. This is the literal, no, you do not gotta hand it to ISIS. Like, that is literally what that he did in the responses say he was joking. Now,
yeah, good.
It's like, but once you made the lack of sarcasm so clear, it's impossible to know.
I thought he was being serious.
I did too.
I didn't see the reply.
I did too. I tweeted out, we love a good zag. It's like, hey man, in this business, I do love someone taking the other side of something.
You get that from baseball writers from time to time too. They seem to be the ones that just the sarcasm gets lost.
Hope nobody steals the money from Arson Judge. And so does so does John Heyman there. All right, Blue Jays back in action this weekend. The lowly Rockies coming to town. I'd just like to make a request for this series of two things. I'd like to see Kevin Gausman throw the ball reasonably hard, and I'd like to see the bats hit balls reasonably hard. I don't feel like that's too much to ask. We'll see if Kevin Barker agrees. He joins us next. Fan Morning Show continues with Gunningham Rubinoff on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Unrivaled insight, analysis, and opinions on all things Blue Jays. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Brent Gunning, Jesse Rubinoff here with you, getting you set for your Friday. Blue Jays tonight on the Sportsnet Network. First pitch set for 7:07. Blue Jays kicking off a series against the Rockies. And who better to get you set for the weekend and get you set for some baseball than my friend and yours, Kevin Barker. Barks, how's it going, bud?
Hey, boys, what's up? Hey, I think I should be mad about that song. Well, you guys think I should be mad about that?
If you do think you should, and I wouldn't disagree with you on just about anything, yeah. You just need to direct all ire to one, Jeff has a party.
Yeah, well,
I'm looking at him right now. I even said to...
Is he smiling?
He is. He's laughing. He's actually kind of... I got to be honest, he's kind of hiding. He looks a little scared because he sees how mad you sound. So, yeah, that's what's happening. So any ire, and I want to be clear, like, you know, I'm a team player, unless you're involved, and I will take your side over against Jeff. So I'm just being honest with you there.
I'm trying to be mad, but it's funny.
Yeah, I can't.
I think he got me a little. So, yeah, I continue to do it. It's pretty cool. I mean, only him, I think, can get away with that this early in the morning. So we'll let him have it.
Okay. Well, should we talk to you next week, try not to remember this, that I'm telling you that he's on vacation. So it's someone else getting away with it if we talk to you next week.
He's told me that 300 times already that he's not working next week.
He is very excited to let everyone in the building know how little work he's doing. Off day yesterday for the Blue Jays, no work for them. A lot of work ahead against a Rockies team. This team has been getting, and this team being the Rockies, they've been getting shelled. They've been giving up a ton of runs. How important is it for the Jays to have kind of a, I won't even call it a get-right weekend, because the series against the Mariners, last game aside, went pretty well. But how important is it to kind of tee off on a team that's been giving up some runs early on in the season?
I don't know if you guys feel confident in them teeing off on anybody. Like, I'm not sure they're capable of doing that. You know, I think it's very individual. Some certain guys in the lineup need to just sort of figure out what they're not doing well and try and fix it. And I know that's what they're doing. Like, they got 15 guys down there flipping to them, and, you know, they got mental coaches and trying to walk them through every bad little thing that they're trying to figure out and you know, take a bunch of swings in the cage. Look, I just think it's grind some at-bats out. If you continue to do that, you'll gain some confidence when you do get the one you're supposed to get, and you'll hit that thing hard and it'll go where you want it to go. So I don't think for me, I mean, what's that mean? Beat them 8-0, 8-1. I mean, the Rockies hit a bunch of homers with dudes on base. Like, you're going to have to, you know, if you're pitching against the Rockies, you're going to have to make good pitches. You're going to have to be very efficient with, you know, the strike three pitches. Like, you're going to have to control how many pitches you throw per inning. We've seen the bullpen. Like, you know, until Romano and Swanson get back, that's, you know, sort of John's going to have to figure out how he's going to work the two lefties down there, Mays and Cabrera. You know, can you, you know, stay away from abusing Garcia? Garcia's got tremendous stuff. Can you maintain that throughout an entire season? So, yeah, there's some things they need to iron out. I think this is very individual this early in the season. It's a controlled environment. You know, we should see the best out of everybody. It shouldn't be cold. They shouldn't worry about, you know, getting some old bones loose and the velocity's not there. It should be raring and ready to go. Everything should be crisp and fluid and flexible, and we should see the best out of everybody. So sometimes it's you know, best for them to have one of those days early in the season where it's been a grind. You know, it does look like they've got better approaches. You have that day where you can walk away. You're not thinking about it anymore. They show up today, you know, it's back to the lunch pail. You get it done, and you just be very individual about it. I know this is a team game, but this early in the season when guys are trying to figure it out, and especially, you know, sometimes when you expect things from certain guys and it's just not happening early in the season, it's a grind. Like, mentally, they're trying to figure this thing out. It's not lack of effort. So it's good for them just to have a day where they can walk away, and hopefully they show up today and they get some hits and they score lots of runs. They make it easier on Pete Walker and John Schneider to not have to always make the right move with the pitching staff.
It feels like in the games that some of them that they've won, you've seen the MO. It's been the Vladdy home runs or stringing together hits. But other times, you know, it's one step forward, two steps back. And you start to look at this lineup and you wonder, well, where is the production going to come from? Like, where are you in terms of the overall offense? Like, are they just slated to be an average offense when they're even performing at their best? Is it something that at this point, even this early in the season, sort of the ship has sailed on them being a very good offense just based on what we've seen even through 13 games here?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a fair statement. I think there's a big enough sample size that I'm probably fair in saying that they're probably not a top eight offense in baseball. You know, but I do think they have some guys in the top four spots of the order, you know, that could help carry a team. You just need one of those guys to get smoking hot and stay hot for a couple of weeks at a time, right? And then pass the baton to one of the other guys, and then he gets hot for a couple of weeks. It's sort of the trickle-down effect of that way, right? I mean, they sort of bookended, I think, the way they want to with Springer. You know, looks like his eye's a little bit better. He's competing a little bit you know, better with two strikes. He's working counts sometimes. Like, I think that's a grind for a pitcher to have to make a really good pitch early in counts, which is very important for this lineup. I think Turner hitting cleanup is very important, right? I mean, he's annihilating baseballs with two strikes. You know, not too many people can hit somewhere around the 350 mark with two strikes. I think all six of his doubles have come with two strikes. I know his one home run's come with two strikes. So I think that's contagious. A lot of guys see him, you know, not always swinging 100%. You know, that was sort of Vladdy's, I don't want to say problem, but, you know, one of the things he was trying to iron out is, you know, it's okay to just to go up and trust your mechanics and not think you can make up for it with bat speed. That, you know, there's a fine line there, especially when guys are throwing a bunch of breaking balls or changing speeds. They're holding the ball, trying to disrupt your timing. It's, you know, I think easier to be consistent just to think cage swing. I don't have to overswing. I don't have to chase distance. If I'm mechanically sound, I get my foot down on time. Because you're super talented, the ball will go where you want it to go. So I do think they like what they're you know, giving out with the first four guys. And then after that, I don't think they have any idea. Like Dalton Varsho, what are you going to get? You know, Alejandro Kirk's all over the place. He's playing all the time. When he's an 80%, 20% guy, it means 80% behind the plate. I think offensively, it's just not fair to ask him to even try and be a 750 OPS guy. Mm. I don't think that's realistic. So, you know, I think they're happy when, you know, the catching situation sort of, you know, solidifies itself and Danny Jansen can get back. And, you know, I think perfect scenario, it's Danny Jansen playing 4 days a week behind the plate and Alejandro Kirk the other three times, right? I think offensively you would get the best out of Alejandro Kirk. So, yeah, there's some things, right? I guess you could say they're fortunate to be 6-7, but, you know, it could also be worse too, right? There've been no hit. There've been one hit. Just offensively, consistency of an approach has just not been there. And I think at least in the Seattle series where, you know, if you face a right-handed pitcher who throws 99 miles an hour and has lots of run and I can't hit that, why would I look for it? And you could tell, you know, against those Munoz at bats that they were sitting slider. It didn't work out all the time, but at least you could tell they had a visible approach, which I think is what Donnie Baseball is trying to sort of force them into having is, you know, if you can't do something against a certain guy, go up and look for something else and buy into it. Like, I ain't swinging. If I'm looking for the slider, I ain't swinging a fastball even if it's right down the middle. So at least you can visibly see that they're buying into an approach. And I think if they have that, because they do have some talent in their lineup, it's just that consistency of that approach all the time has just not been there. And I think they've taken a step forward a little bit and hopefully you will see them grind out at bats. And when you grind out at bats, it just gives that pitcher a chance to hang one. And if you hang one because they can hit a few homers, I think that's what they're hoping for is a bloop and a bomb. And again, it's, you know, a little bit easier for John to make the right move, which is, you know, sometimes because there's a lot in the season and there's a lot of innings, sometimes you can go to the wrong guy and you don't want to do that, especially this early in the season.
Yeah, no, you're right to say that about the more you battle, the more likely you are to get mistakes. And, you know, even like just to pinpoint a guy like Varsho, right? Like, say what you will about him as a hitter. It's like he can hit a mistake out of the ballpark pretty easily. Like, he does have pop in the bat. There's other questions we have about him, but that issue in and of itself, if he gets the pitch to hit, he's capable of doing damage. I'm just kind of pinpointing on him. You mentioned ahead.
One quick thing about Dalton Varsho. Please. He is trying to get better separation between his front foot and his hand, which will give him more torque, right? Because he's a stride separate guy. If you guys don't know what stride separate means, it means you eliminate your lower half quicker in your swing. Means I want to separate my lower half from my upper half as quickly as possible. And if you do that, you have to have better separation between your front foot and your hands to create the torque and the bat speed and the balance you want throughout your swing. So he is trying to, you know, I don't want to say make a conscious effort during his swing to do that, but I think, you know, when his cage work on the field, it's visible that he has better separation. There is more separation there, which will help the bat speed, and, you know, that will allow the ball to travel longer. If the ball travels longer, as everybody knows, you see the ball longer, it gives you a better opportunity to lay off some things, especially elevated fastballs that we know is his kryptonite. And, you know, to Dalton's defense, he ain't a great hitter. Like, I think we got to remember that. It's you know, he's not going to hit 300. He ain't going to hit 350 with runners in scoring position. And I don't think they're asking that from him. I just think they want him to run into some with dudes on base. If he could do that, say, 20 times, that's a really good season for him, because we know he's going to play great defense, and we know how he runs the bases. He's very smart, right? We saw that the other day with the line drive. I mean, that is base running 101. But how many times have we seen dudes screw that up? A lot, especially with dudes that are hitting under 100. It's not the easiest thing to separate that. So I think I want to just throw that in there, because I know how hard he works. I know how much effort he puts into the mental part of it. And, you know, it's not lack of effort. And I think sometimes we're a little too hard on him. At least I am. And I just wanted to throw out there that it's not because he ain't in a cage trying to figure out how to be the best Dalton Varsho he can possibly be.
No, that's good insight. I think people like that a lot. And this may surprise you, but because Jesse and I spend way too much time thinking about our golf swing, I'm like, that does make a lot of sense. You get those hands separated from the lower half. Yeah. It does make a lot of sense. You talk about Danny Jansen. He hits the grand slam in his rehab assignment there. That's nice to see. Shocker. Danny Jansen runs into one with men on base. I think I've seen that a time or two. How does he complicate if at all, the DH equation when he comes back? I mean, Justin Turner was a guy they wanted to give a lot of run there. They've been using him in the field more than I think they would like. It seems like they're doing that to get the best offensive lineup available, which I have no issue with, given what we've talked about, the problem they have or have had doing damage. But how do you think Jansen coming back, if at all, kind of changes the DH equation and what they're going to do?
Yeah, I know John has had the conversation with Justin Turner in spring training about he may have to play certain positions more than, you know, what he's prepared for, just because offensively they're trying to get the best lineup in there, whether it be a lefty, you know, DHing, whether it be Vladdy's played too much at first and needs to DH, whatever the case is, they need to, you know, get a different DH in there just because of offensive purposes. Danny Jansen ain't DHing when he comes back. He is playing. Well, he is going to catch. Like, that's what I said, right?
No, I mean if you get a better version of Kirk, if you occasionally work him in there to try to get both their bats in. I understand that's dangerous with the two catchers, but that's what I was getting at.
I'm sure, right? I mean, they played Ernie Clement at third base. They'll play Justin Turner at third base. They'll play Kevin Biggio at third base. It's sort of who is doing well, right? They put Justin Turner at second. Like, they will maneuver around the infield, making sure that, you know, the defense is not going to suffer first, because they are still a run prevention team. I mean, I know it is boring to watch, absolutely, but you still want to be putting the guys in the spots who can catch the ball and, you know, throw it across the diamond with some accuracy and that kind of thing. You don't want to, you know, just completely go away from that, but you can tell they are trying to get the best lineup on the field. And if that means that after, you know, Danny Jansen gets back and he's catching more than Kirky, and Kirky shows you that the bat has a little bit more snap to it, and he's pulling some more baseballs in the air that, you know, a guy's throwing him some velocity, then yeah, you're going to work him in the DH, and you'll maneuver around other guys on certain positions to help that along. I think John, you know, whether you love him or hate him, has told you guys that basically if these dudes are hitting, especially from the fifth guy on, he's going to do whatever it takes. Like, he's not married to any certain guy in any certain position. If some guy's doing better than a guy that's hitting fifth, like Dalton started the season hitting fifth. He ain't hit fifth in a while because he ain't hitting. Like, they're going to put other guys up there, right? David Schneider's been in that position. So they'll do whatever it takes to try and score runs. Look, because we talk about it all the time doesn't mean they don't know that offensive woes that they have on a consistent basis. They are trying their best to put every single guy in the right position to help a baseball team win a game. It ain't like they're showing up going, how can we screw this lineup up and not play certain guys or not put certain guys in certain positions to help our team. No, it's all about winning. I mean, just watch the games, the way John's handling, you know, how he's going to certain guys and how he's maneuvering the lineup, and now he's, you know, running guys, he's giving the green light a little bit more. Like, there's some urgency here, because he understands, you know, how important it is to get off to a good start because of how good the Orioles are. And, you know, the American League this year is better. You know, the Tigers are better. The Guardians are better. Like, there's some unknowns there that could creep up on you, and you could be out of this thing in a hurry. So you could tell just everybody that talks about the Blue Jays, there's urgency. And I think if you're a fan of that, you like that.
There have been some pretty good starts in AAA Buffalo. Spencer Horowitz is doing pretty well down there. Addison Barger and Yariel Rodriguez, who we finally learned will be getting the call up from the minor league, signed a 5-year, $32 million contract in the offseason. How excited are you to see a guy who I think there's some expectation here. He's probably going to settle into a bit of a long reliever role at first, I would imagine. But how excited are you to see the Cuban hurler up with the Toronto Blue Jays?
Yeah, I think that you can't argue he's got stuff. I mean, he's got everything to get lefties and righties out, which is, you know, first and foremost. Now I think it's just cleaning up the little things. It's the start and stop. Consistently, he get a really good hitter out twice through the order by, you know, falling behind. Because that's his thing, is sometimes he throws too many pitches in too few innings. And it's the all the things that are going on that before he releases the baseball. He's a right-handed Yusei Kikuchi, basically, with all that stuff happening. And now you've seen the way they've cleaned that up, how, you know, he's able to make a few quicker adjustments. You say he's a big arm side miss guy. And now I think because he's cleaned up some mechanics, he understands that when he does that, something internally will tell him, do this, you won't do that as much. And I think that's sort of where they're at with Yario. Is Pete Walker's very good at staying out of the way. That's the hardest thing for a coach to do at the big league level, is stay out of the way. And he is one of the best at that. It's very hard for a guy to show up who's got the stuff that Rodriguez has got and just not want to jump in there and go, hey, you know, at the big leagues, that ain't going to work. Like, sooner or later, you falling behind and throwing a guy a hanging slider, you know, that may have worked where you were before. It's not going to work here consistently. We need to fix that right away. Petey's the best at that. Petey's really good at getting out of the way, letting that guy show him what he does best, and then sort of refining that and just, you know, giving him little things to work on every once in a while instead of a bunch of things to work on all at once. So I think that's probably what's going to happen, is don't want to waste his bullets. I mean, that's why they sent him to the minor leagues, is, you know, they had other guys they could abuse early. They didn't want to abuse this guy. Now they got a certain number in mind that, you know, with however many pitches or batters, who knows how it's going to work, but they do have a number in mind of how they're going to use him and how much they're going to use him. And now I think you'd rather see that stuff here, because they understand again what the offense is not doing and how much run prevention means to this team, and sort of what the bullpen looks like with not some key guys in there. So to have some stuff down there that you'd like to go to in key situations, and oh, by the way, can give you more than one inning, which will make it easier for John. And this is what it's all about, right? Is now John can go to certain guys who has stuff instead of trying to force it to guys who are going through some velocity issues and some command issues early in the season that he quite frankly don't want to go to.
Yeah, no, that's all well said. Man, if you want more of that wonderful insight, and that sounded sarcastic, but I meant it earnestly, check in Blair and Barker today. Barker, always love getting you on. Go dominate Jeff Blair on the air today.
Absolutely, every single day.
Obviously.
Thanks, everybody, Barker. Have a wonderful Friday.
Of course, like saying the sun should rise tomorrow. Obviously, Kevin Barker going to dominate Jeff Blair on that show. I love Barker's insight. If I am going to say one thing, if they're going to say that that's right-handed Kikuchi, could it be second year? I don't know that I want first year right-handed Kikuchi.
No.
I've kind of like seen that on this team before. It's like, this guy has some stuff and can't find the strike zone to save his life. Hello, Nate Pearson. We've seen this movie before. Rodriguez, I'm intrigued by. You don't, especially for a team that's kept the book so clean, you don't pay a guy to not use him. And obviously they were going to use him. It was just a matter of buildup and getting him in here. Bowden Francis officially on notice with him being here. Not to say they want him as a starter, but maybe more of an opener type. We know that's a thing in baseball, despite my best wishes and interest there. So, yeah, I'm intrigued that he gets up. Big, big weekend. Big start tonight for Gausman. You need him to be good, just given what he was his last time out. I think, I shouldn't speak for you, but I'm of the belief that was just a blip. Same exact thing happened last year. I'm also of the belief that I really need to see it proven that it was just a blip. Everything that was an excuse in New York has been taken away. So please, let's not have that happen tonight. First pitch just after 7:00.
Yeah, no more cold weather excuse. Mm-mm. Like let's get the miles per hour back up and back to what we're accustomed to from Kevin Gausman.
Yeah, certainly. Now time for the Wake and Rake, presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sportsbook. 19+, bet responsibly. Leafs. Third to last, not penultimate, but the one before the penultimate game of the season will be tomorrow night against the Wings, hockey night in Canada at Scotiabank. The results of the game, sure, I think the Leafs will probably win. That's my take on it. But this is all about Austin Matthews. Does he hit 70? It does feel like if the team had their druthers, he would hit 70 in this game at home in front of all the fans, and then you could park him for two games against Florida teams. That would be their druthers. Do you think he does it? Does he get to 70 tomorrow? I think that's really the only thing that matters about this game.
I think he does. I think he's on just a world-class heater. And when you have the best goal scorer in the world on this kind of run and everybody on his team is also focused on getting him to 70, I think that's a big thing too. Like, yes, the result matters because they are still fighting for home ice, and that game against the Panthers on the 16th might actually be pretty significant in terms of home ice. But I do think you're starting to see even more so than usual. They're feeding him. They're trying to get him to 70. And then if he can get to 70 and then sit out the last two games, I think that would be best case scenario for everyone involved. So I say he does do it tomorrow night.
Yeah, it does feel like worst case scenario for Sheldon Keefe is he gets one tomorrow night, and then you're faced with a pretty tough decision. Wings will have a lot to play for in that game. They're just 1 point back of the Penguins, who they lost to last night. They both just have three games left on the season. So Leafs won't have a ton unless you care about home ice. The Red Wings will have a ton to play for in that. That was the Wake and Rake, brought to you by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sportsbook. 19 plus, bet responsibly. Coming up next, a man who bets responsibly from time to time. Sam McKee going to join us. A little smorgasbord, whatever you want. You want a little Leafs, you want a little Masters. I don't know. The Blue Jays didn't play yesterday, so I don't know that he'll have any gripes and grouses to get off. But, you know, it's not dealer's choice because I'm the dealer. But he'll choose the topic next. We're going to get into it with McKee. 1 hour left on the Fan Morning Show with Gunning and Rubinoff on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.